Chapter 21. A day or so later, and again his freedom, to go as he pleased upon the roads, may be taken as a mark of increasing social disorganization and police embarrassment. He wandered out into the open country. He speaks of the roads of that plutocratic age as being fenced with barbed wire against unpropertied people, apostrophe of the high-walled gardens and trespass warnings that kept him to the moldy narrowness of the public ways. In the air, happy rich people were flying, heedless of the misfortunes about them, as he himself had been flying 2 years ago, and along the road swept the new traffic, light and swift and wonderful. One was rarely out of earshot of its whistles, and gongs and siren cries, even in the field paths, or over the open downs. The officials of the labor exchanges were everywhere overworked and infuriated. The casual wards were so crowded that the surplus wanderers slept in ranks under sheds or in the open air, and since giving to wayfarers had been made a punishable offense, there was no longer friendship or help for a man from the rarefoot passenger or the wayside cottage. I wasn't angry, apostrophe said Barnett. I saw an immense selfishness, a monstrous disregard for anything but pleasure and possession in all those people above us, but I saw how inevitable that was, how certainly if the richest had changed places with the poorest, that things would have been the same. What else can happen when men use science, and every new thing that science gives, and all their available intelligence and energy, to manufacture wealth and appliances, and leave government and education to the rustling traditions of hundreds of years ago? Those traditions come from the Dark Ages, when there was really not enough for everyone, when life was a fierce struggle that might be unmasked, but could not be escaped. Of course, this famine grabbing, this fierce dispossession of others, must follow from such a disharmony between material and training. Of course, the rich were vulgar, and the poor grew savage, and every added power that came to men made the rich richer, and the poor less necessary and less free. The men I met in the casual wards and the relief offices were all smoldering for revolt, talking of justice and injustice and revenge. I saw no hope in that talk, nor in anything but patience. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but he did not mean a passive patience. He meant that the method of social reconstruction was still a riddle, that no effectual rearrangement was possible until this riddle in all its tangled aspects was solved. I tried to talk to those discontented men, apostrophe he wrote, but it was hard for them to see things as I saw them. When I talked of patience and the larger scheme, they answered, "But then we shall all be dead," and I could not make them see, what is so simple to my own mind, that that did not affect the question. Men who think in lifetimes are of no use to statesmanship. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he does not seem to have seen a newspaper during those wanderings, and a chance sight of the transparency of a kiosk in the marketplace at Bishop's Stortford announcing a grave international situation did not excite him very much. There had been so many grave international situations in recent years. This time it was talk of the Central European powers suddenly attacking the Slav Confederacy, with France and England going to the help of the Slavs. But the next night he found a tolerable meal awaiting the vagrants in the casual ward, and learned from the workhouse master that all serviceable trained men were to be sent back on the morrow to their mobilization centers. The country was on the eve of war. He was to go back through London to Surrey. His first feeling, he records, was one of extreme relief, that his days of hopeless battering at the underside of civilization were at an end. Here was something definite to do, something definitely provided for. But his relief was greatly modified when he found that the mobilization arrangements had been made so hastily and carelessly that for nearly 36 hours at the improvised depot at Epsom he got nothing either to eat or to drink but a cup of cold water. The depot was absolutely unprovisioned, and no one was free to leave it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.